Martinis. We gave up martinis a long time ago last night. Dan Foster of National Review is in for Jim Garrity today. I'm Greg Corumbus. We're pretty much just with the hard stuff today. Dan, the fact that we're even here and mildly coherent after what happened last night is a testament to the human will. So let's talk about...
Yeah, you know, it reminds me of the classic recipe for a perfect martini is to pour 3 or 4 ounces of vodka into a glass and look at a bottle of vermouth. That's the perfect dry martini. So we went extra dry last night, I think.
We'll kind of scrap our normal format. There's not a ton of good. There is some good, but not a ton. Obviously, the president got reelected. His electoral college margin, I'm guessing he's going to take Florida in the end, will be 332 to 206. It's much closer in the popular vote. Some are saying that if you took 1 million votes and spread them out over 4 different states, Mitt Romney would be the next president. But that didn't happen. There are many things that have run through my mind in the last 12 hours or so, Dan, and I'm sure they have for you as well. What are you most focused on right now about what we learned and where we're headed as a country?
Yeah, well, a couple of things. Sadly, you know, that off mic, I did kind of call this. I hated to be right about it. I didn't feel good going into yesterday. I hadn't felt good. I felt great about Romney, say, 2 weeks ago, and then things started to peter out. It wasn't Sandy so much. It was just seeing him hit a wall in the polls that didn't seem to be surmountable by anything, any of the options that were left to him. So I felt poorly going into yesterday. Unfortunately, that's how things turned out. I was saying earlier that I'm trying to really put like a 3-day waiting period on expressing any thoughts, almost as if I were off to buy a handgun. a 3-day waiting period on expressing any sort of grand, this is what this means sort of thoughts. But there are a couple of things that I will venture to say, and they go into why, when I've talked to conservatives over the last weeks and months, I told them that I wasn't feeling good about this election. One is the whole skewing the polls thing, Nate Silver. Unfortunately, the fact that Nate Silver did a poll aggregation that's not that much different than what Real Clear Politics did has turned him into the Albert Einstein of the liberal movement overnight. I'm already seeing people say this was a win for science because Nate Silver used some undergraduate statistical methods to look at polling work that other people did. We had a problem, I think, that's indicative on the right in misreading the polls and in thinking that they were somehow skewed. And it all breaks down to this sample stuff. We joked about it yesterday, but we've been talking for months and months about whether these D+5, D+7, D+8 samples, you know, how they were utter garbage and how it was ridiculous to think that that's what the electorate would look like. We just, I think, on the right failed to internalize that Democrats are very, very successful at manufacturing Democrats. One of the big side effects of Democratic governance is the creation of new Democrats because, you know, it's basically a client transactional style of governing. And, you know, you create new clients. When you have Democrats in office for 4 years, you create new clients, you create new Democrats across a broad variety of fronts. And I think demographically and based on the priorities of the Democratic Party, they're really good at making new Democrats. And that's something we failed to internalize. Yeah, I think, you know, we were right to point to conservative or Republican enthusiasm going into Election Day. We were right to think that the electorate was going to be more fired up, if not about Mitt Romney, then at least against Barack Obama than they were in 2008. But the thing that we failed to internalize was that there just weren't enough self-identified Republicans or independents to overcome what looks like about a D+5 or a D+6 electorate. And the other thing that I think is surprising and depressing about the election, I should say briefly, I don't think this is a massive defeat for conservatism. I think we're talking about, as you said, a couple million votes, if you want to look at it in terms of the hearts and minds of America, the popular votes, and 500,000, if you want to look at it in terms of 3 or 4 swing states. But this is the system we have. This is the way the election went. I don't think it's a massive defeat for conservatism. You know, Mitt Romney still had 60 million people vote for him. That's not the issue. But what I do think is amazing and depressing is that all the polling consistently, especially for the last couple of months, said that the most important issue on the minds of Americans were jobs and the economy. And all those same polls said that they thought Mitt Romney would do a better job on that issue. And they reelected President Obama. And my worry there is that presidential politics has at long last, after centuries of punditry, joking, about this become a popularity contest in a way that I don't think we fully appreciate yet. People have been talking about the superficial aspect of presidential campaigns since 1800, but to me, it's very striking that polls consistently said Romney would do a better job on the most important issue to voters, and they voted for the other guy. So those are the two things that I take away from the election. Policy-wise, it's a bad scene. Obviously, Obamacare gets enshrined. The Supreme Court is a real, real worry. But I don't think in terms of the future of the Republican Party or of the conservative movement that this is a shattering or conclusive defeat.
I should probably take your 3-day waiting period before I say what I'm about to say, but I'm going to say a little bit of it anyway. I might edit it on the fly here a little bit, Dan. Is just the stark contrast that we had, the stark performance and lack of a successful performance over the past 4 years made it glaringly obvious, at least to almost half of America, which direction this country ought to go. And the fact that a small but nonetheless existing majority of Americans decided that they're okay with massive debt, they're okay with intrusive government, they're okay with a permanent majority of liberals on the Supreme Court. Obamacare won last night. That's it. Obamacare is going to win. In the end, we have settled as a nation, again, not all of us, and probably not most of the people who listen to this podcast. Mediocrity and decline is essentially the new normal. We talk about it every time we see a jobs report that the White House crows about because they didn't even get to the point where they matched enough jobs for the people that joined the labor force. But suddenly that's okay. An unemployment rate that a generation ago would have absolutely destroyed a president and did 20 years ago and 32 years ago. Amazing performance on a day when there was such a chance to bring it back to more sane leadership. And when you look at the demographics, younger people are trending more and more liberal. You look at the exploding Latino population. The demographics are not good for us going down the line. And this, I think, was a very good chance to reverse course or at least slam on the brakes to some extent. And America did not seem interested in that, even though it was very close.
I share a lot of your concerns, and I was where you are and lower over the course of 12 hours, and I'll probably be there again. But there's a simple answer to this, and that's that the most successful conservative president in American history was Ronald Reagan, and it was because he was a guy. It wasn't as if in 1979 or 1980 a big enduring majority of Americans woke up and checked out books on Milton Friedman at the library. They were going to be free market capitalists and deregulation was the way to go. It was because there was a man who could communicate those ideas at an unparalleled level for that time and place. The real lesson of this race to me is not that mediocrity is permanently written into the future of America or that we're on some sort of inevitable decline, although sure, in my dark moments, I think that too. But the real lesson of this race to me is we need somebody who is both as good a politician and campaign strategist. I mean, you want to read some of the pieces today on the way the Obama campaign ran itself, and just, you know, you kind of have to tip your cap. They were just a brutal, just sort of a killing machine, as I called them today on the corner. They were a drone strike of a campaign. You know, they had it all figured out. So we need somebody who's both a great campaigner in that sense and somebody who's an incredibly effective communicator. The key for conservatives is find a great man or woman and run them for the presidency. And I like Mitt Romney a lot. I think Mitt Romney would have been a fine president. I think he's one of the better human beings that Republicans have nominated in recent history in terms of just his civic sense of duty, his patriotism, and his philanthropy in his personal life. But he is not and was not, and nobody was under the illusion that he was a once-in-a-generation communicator in the way that Ronald Reagan or FDR was. And the key for the conservative movement and for the victory of, you know, traditional American ideas of limited government, freedom, and free enterprise is to find somebody who can win that argument. And we will find them again. I do not doubt it.
No, I certainly hope you're right. Let's go from bad to worse in our limited time left here. There were, 33 Senate seats up, and the Democrats playing defense on the vast majority of them. They only gave up one. Deb Fischer crushed Bob Kerry in Nebraska. So many others really didn't even come close, Dan. That was a big surprise and kind of a bellwether in some of the presidential states as well. When you saw how early the Senate races were getting called, you knew that the mustache firewall states, as Jim Garrity likes to call them, weren't going to be far behind being called for Obama. Connie Mack never came close in Florida. Linda McMahon got slammed in Connecticut. George Allen did make a pretty good race of it in Virginia, but he didn't get there. Josh Mandel, Tom Smith, Richard Murdoch, and Todd Akin obviously shot themselves in the foot. Denny Rehberg, I was shocked, couldn't win out in Montana. It looks like even Rick Berg's not going to win in North Dakota, although it still hasn't been called yet. Good news that Jeff Flake won out in Arizona, that Dean Heller hung on in Nevada, and Ted Cruz, who's going to be a star in the party, won big in Texas. And so there's some bright lights on the horizon, but it looks like it's either a 54-46 or 55-45 Senate for the Democrats. And with Harry Reid now promising to tinker with the filibuster rules, it's going to be a real fun 2 years here.
That'll keep me in paychecks for a good long time. If Reid starts tinkering with the filibuster, I'm not worried about my job. Yeah, I mean, the Senate's not wasn't great, I think, and I said, you know, I've been saying for a while that Akin deserved to lose. I just think you can't be that bad at your message. You can't be that uninformed on science, basic science and biology, and you just can't be that sloppy of a communicator on a very sensitive issue to win. I thought Murdoch didn't necessarily impress me, but I certainly would have voted for if I were in Indiana, and I thought he was a fairly good candidate. I'm softer on Lugar than a lot of people, including people around here, were. But Murdoch was a fine candidate, and I think what he said was not even on the same order of what Akin said, but Akin, having come before, you know, obviously amplified it and gave the left something to sink their claws into. So, you know, that was unavoidable. But you're right. I mean, it's two elections in a row now where we've had pretty clear shots to take the Senate, and we didn't do it. But I'll say this, if anyone who wants to blame that on the Tea Party and the influence of the Tea Party, that's all well and good. But the Tea Party has also improved the quality of the conservatives that we have in the Senate. And it did it again this year in the form of Cruz and Flake. And it certainly did it in a big way in 2010.
The good news as we exit here, Dan, is the House. It looks like the Republicans will actually lose seats, but they'll keep the majority. Mia Love lost. I thought that was a big surprise there. Redistricting went very well for us in North Carolina. We also knocked off Ben Chandler in Kentucky, knocked off Kritz in Pennsylvania. And even though it's still a Democrat, based on the way the whole primary system worked in California, we finally got rid of Pete Stark. And that is reason to smile if there ever was one today.
Yeah, Pete Stark's a good consolation prize. Very sad about Mia Love. I think she's got a future. She's a great candidate and a great person.
And, of course, there's still some out there who may lose their seats. Alan West is one of them. Dan Lundgren in California. There's Benishek in Michigan is ahead right now, but it's still very, very close. So we'll see exactly how it shakes out. So, Dan, you've actually given me some encouragement today, and I thank you for that. And as always, we thank you for filling in for Jim.
No problem.
Dan Foster is the news editor at National Review Online. I'm Greg Corumbus for Radio America. Dan and I will be back tomorrow for the next edition of the Three Martini Lunch.